This past week, President Bush defended his administration's handling of post-war Iraq at an Air National Guard base in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Since Mr. Bush took office in January 2001, he's frequently used military bases as the setting and military personnel as the backdrop for his policy statements. An article in the October issue of Harper's Magazine, written by novelist Kevin Baker, begins with a description of one such speech delivered by the president at Fort Hood, Texas, a little more than 2 months before the invasion of Iraq.
If force becomes necessary to secure our country and to keep the peace, America will act deliberately. America will act decisively. And America will prevail because we've got the finest military in the world.
Kevin Baker's article is called "We're in the Army Now, the GOP's Plan to Militarize Our Culture," and Kevin Baker joins us from member station WKNO in Memphis, Tennessee. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Leanne.
Explain to us why, in your view, the president so often makes use of a military audience or a military installation for his public statements.
Well, I think it's using the military as a prop. It's using the military to substitute for other policies that we could and should be doing now. And I think, frankly, it's also to cover up and make people forget about some of the lack of a military background he himself has.
But do you think he's really unique in this? I mean, using the military for political purposes and public relations. I mean, think about it. Respect for the commander-in-chief is sort of is bred in the men and women who are in the armed forces. So isn't this something every president would do to look presidential?
Well, the level he's taken it to, I think, is unique. You know, as one reader pointed out in a letter, he could not think of another time when an American president had dressed up in a military uniform while president. And thinking about it, I really can't think of another one either, save perhaps for Washington during the Whiskey Rebellion, when he actually did have to go out and lead troops. And I think there was a big reason for this. We had some of the finest generals in our national history as presidents, everyone from Washington to Taylor to Grant to Eisenhower. And they all went to civilian clothes when they were president, in all appearances. The idea was once again to reassert the idea that a civilian is in command. And for George W. Bush to don military gear for that landing on the carrier, I find kind of amazing.
There's a term you use throughout article that you say epitomizes the relationship between the Bush administration and the U.S. military. Tell us the term and tell us what it means.
Right. The term is hooah, which is a longstanding military term. It's kind of a term that means gung-ho, determined. It's also used as yes, you know, when you say you're going to do that, you say hooah. And it's a great term. It's one of these typical, terrific terms that come out of the military. This was unfortunately transformed as well, though, in some of these Bush rallies, as at Fort Hood, into a kind of rallying cry that I think took on a whole other context.
Elaborate on that a little bit, because in the article you actually call Mr. Bush the president of hooah.
In the way that he seems to try to get this bump from this that isn't particularly deserved. You know, he's out there making political statements and talking about issues of policy, whether we were going to go into Iraq, whether we were going to go into North Korea. And it's in front of this sort of stacked audience that gives this kind of military chant. In a way, it's substituting the military for the American polity in general. And, of course, you always want the military very much attached to America, but in a way that's substituting kind of the military's approval for the approval of the average American citizen.
President Bush isn't the first president, a recent president, to actually use the military to defend American interests. I mean, President Clinton ordered a missile strike against Osama bin Laden in 1998. He took the U.S. into an air war against Slobodan Milosevic. So what's so new about the president's use of the military?
Right. Oh, I think the president has to use the military, unfortunately, in today's world. We live in this world where there are evil people. Every president for the foreseeable future will have to do some kind of military operation such as this. But I think we have to pick our spots very carefully, and I think we really have to think about what the consequences will be. You know, it seems to be that in Iraq, for instance, we very much accurately assessed how quickly the Saddam regime would fall and how quickly its military could be overrun. We seem to have not really very well accurately assessed how difficult it would be to put the country back together. And right now it's coming back to haunt us every day in lives lost, in money wasted.
Even though your article is critical of the Bush administration and the Republican Party, Democrats do not escape the criticism. You write about the Democratic Party being a cobweb that's waiting to be swept away, and you call the current crop of Democratic presidential candidates the most singular array of non-entities, curiosities, stalking horses, and outright charlatans ever brought together on a single stage. What's wrong with the opposition?
Yeah, I can't get going there. I've been glad to see them actually focus their criticism a little more. But it seems to me that the Democratic Party's leadership in general is simply reactive to Bush. And, you know, any opposition must be critical. That's part of it. But they don't really articulate a broad, different vision for the world or for America. They have to kind of come up with something that's somewhere between, you know, Saddam and Bush or Osama and Bush, a policy that will engage the world and take seriously the threat of terrorism, but at the same time not curtail our civil liberties and not commit us to each and every wild foreign adventure.
I mean, you write about, well, you certainly write about political activists on the liberal left is how you characterize
right.
them, but unable to muster a convincing worldview to counter that put forward by the party of Hua.
Right. Yeah, there's unfortunately been much, you know, much too much rhetoric from, and I consider myself a liberal, but much too much rhetoric about, you know, sort of acting as if this required no response, that you could blow up these, you know, two towers and part of the Pentagon, and you wouldn't really have to deal with it. Of course you have to address that. Of course you have to address what's really become this global network of terrorism. And you have to constantly address people like Saddam Hussein, too. You know, it should be, I would think, traditional definitions of liberalism to want every dictator in the world, every Saddam, thrown out of power. You know, these people are not our friends, even if we think that tactically we might want to deal with them in different ways.
You write that a military draft, which the Pentagon opposes, would actually right. pose a mortal threat to the popularity of the Bush administration. Right. Do you support the restoration of the draft?
Well, you know, I do. I mean, it's easy for me to say, you know, when I reached draft age, there was no draft. But I think there's some kind of national service, whether it's in the military or not, is a good idea in general. And if we are embarked on this global, endless campaign against terrorism around the world, I think we're going to have a draft. This should not be something that falls completely on the shoulders of the poor, the working classes, the minorities, the new immigrants in this country. This should be a shared burden.
Novelist Kevin Baker. His article, We're in the Army Now, is in the October issue of Harper's Magazine. His most recent novel, Paradise Alley, has just been released in paperback by HarperCollins. He joined us from the studios of WKNO in Memphis, Tennessee. Kevin, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me, Leanne.